You just pointed to all of me. Welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I am your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode number 43, Protagonists and Antagonists, Bad Guys and Good Guys. Hello everyone, welcome back to another week of story structure and story analysis from a dramatic theory of story point of view. As mentioned in the introduction, my name is Jim Hull. I am the voice of Narrative First and the guy who writes all that stuff on Narrative First, all the articles, all the analyses, the guy who is completely obsessed with Dramatica and wants everybody to understand how it actually works because he thinks it's amazing. Or I think it's amazing. Updates from last week. I finally published the Logan analysis that I talked about in last week's podcast. Wrote that out based on the conversation I had with the director as to the story form and got to write down. And it's always great writing the analyses because as I'm putting it down on, well, not really paper, but as I'm putting it down on the screen, I start to pick up on how different story points play into the narrative and how they actually come out. So it's really fun to see. So make sure you check that out. I'll leave a link in the show notes. If you're a Narrative First member, you'll have access to download the story form in your dashboard. You just go to narrativefirst.com/dashboard. And if you're not a Narrative First member, then you might want to consider being one. You can go to narrativefirst.com/membership. You get access to the gist collections, the Narrative First downloadable story forms that you can put into your Dramatica Story Expert application, and premium content like the story forming video series. I also published the article identifying the goal and consequence of a complete story. And this starts a series of articles. They're not going to be an official series, but a series of articles based on the conversations in the discussed Dramatica forums that I referred to in last week's podcast. So basically, that whole conversation has given me weeks and weeks of material and ideas for different articles and things to publish. So you're going to be seeing a lot more in the coming weeks as I address every single thing that came up. Because even though the post is labeled Captain America Civil War main character question, we talk about main character, goals and consequences, protagonists and antagonists, impulsive responses, the preconscious, inequity, developing a plan, conceptualizing. It goes all over the place as people start to get the idea of what Dramatica is and what Dramatica isn't. So identifying the goal and consequence is kind of the first one where I sat down. And I give examples from other films like Star Wars and The Matrix. And as Dramatica aficionado Mike Lucas pointed out, the goal that I have for The Matrix is incorrect about tearing down The Matrix or bringing down The Matrix. That was me just kind of mixing up the whole conversation about Civil War with The Matrix. Really, it should be achieving superiority over The Matrix, you know, getting one over on them, because that's actually what happens in that narrative. So I will update that as well. And then by the time you hear this podcast, I will have published another article entitled Identifying the Protagonist and Antagonist of a Complete Story. And what I'm trying to do here is to show how I go about figuring out the narrative of a particular work. And I have a bit of a methodology that I will get into in the main feature of this week's podcast. In regards to that discussed Dramatica conversation, it looks like it might be winding down. It seems to be getting a lot more productive. We're moving on to, you know, what Dramatica terms are and what they aren't and kind of identifying how inequity works. I'm going to try and split them up into the various different topics so they'll be easier for people to find because, I mean, on the one hand, it's great to see kind of the train of thought and how it leads people to finally understand what's going on with Dramatica. I also want to make sure people are able to learn something from it, or at least be able to access certain topics down the road. Just quickly be able to see, like, oh, I'm trying to learn about protagonists and antagonists. What can I find? Which is also the point of the article, so maybe I'm actually covering that already. And I'll leave a link to those discussions in the show notes. So that's it for the updates this week. I still haven't had a chance to finish that From Logline to Treatment email course that's supposed to be on the front page. Still working on it diligently, you know, the entire conversation last week and developing the articles. And for some reason, I'm waking up with story forms in my head. Like, I woke up and I had the story form for the big Lego movie. And I woke up the next day, I had the story form for the big Sick, which I will get into. Just for some reason, I'm dreaming story forms and they're coming out. So the Logline to Treatment course, it's there. You can go through it, but it's not as cool as it will be in the coming weeks. And as soon as it is, I'll let you know. And that's on the front page of narrativefirst.com. Another really cool thing I want to talk about is Milanote. Milanote, M-I-L-A-N-O-T-E, which is at milanote.com, is a virtual whiteboard, which is awesome for planning out your stories with a dramatic theory of story. The gentleman who designed the site, or at least, you know, designed the look of Narrative First, Sean Lester, he referred me to this application earlier this year, and I hadn't had a chance to look at it, but then I finally remembered, oh yeah, I need to check that out. And I checked it out over the summer and started to play around with it and just loved the look of it. I love the look of it, the feel of it. I love the idea that once you put all this work together into the visual representation of it, when you go to export it, you can actually get Markdown, which for those of you who don't know, Markdown is a markup language that a lot of people use when writing on the web. I use it to write all the articles on the site and have for, I guess, maybe a decade now. And it's also the foundation for the Fountain format for writing screenplays. Fountain is a markup language really close to Markdown. They're basically transportable between both. And so if you're able to actually have a visual representation of what your story looks like and be able to drag and drop various cards, which I think is the right methodology for dealing with something like Dramatica, where you have different cards that have different story points tagged onto it, you know, moving those around and adding pictures, whatever kind of inspiration you have, quotes, anything that you want in there to get across, to get more of a holistic feel of the different story points, because Dramatica's story form is really, it's not just this linear plot progression or sequence of beats, it's actually like a holistic model of all these different story points working together. So if you can create a more visual way of representing those story points, then more power to you. And I've been using it with a couple writers now and in my own work, and I love it. I love opening it up. I mean, I've been using Quip for 2 years with mentor students and with other writers, which I love. I love the being able to comment on the different story points that are brought up, and I've never lost a single version of anything because it's always great, and it's just way more appealing to me than Google Docs. But there's just something about Milanote that the design and the thought process behind it's very considered. You know, the team behind it has a great post about quiet time, which I will leave a link to in the show notes, where they don't talk to each other for the first half of the day. That's quiet time. They turn off all the notifications, turn off the iPhones, turn off everything, and they just go and get work done. And they find that by the end of the week, they can actually take Friday afternoon off because they've actually done all the work. I thought that was brilliant. And you can actually feel it within the actual design of the app. And I feel like that makes the stories that much better because there's a considered respect for the artist that's in there. And I hope someday that there's some version of Dramatica that either looks like this or incorporates it. For now, you can just do, I mean, obviously you can do whatever you want to with it. And that's a great thing is the creativity of the artist, of the writer, actually comes through in those boards. Make sure you check that out if you get a chance. I'm going to start using that within the roadmap product that I offer, where I take your story and read it and then figure out the story form and then help you figure out kind of a way to map out or plan out your story. It's basically, you know, if you've ever worked through Dramatica and you get to the end, you're like, okay, now what do I do? So that's where I step in. I step in and I show you, well, this is what you do with it. And the idea is that once you learn how to do it once, you'll be able to use it, you know, yourself and be able to go on and do other things. Unless you want me to help you out on everything. And then, of course, you can always write back to me and ask for more help. So I'll be putting up screenshots of Milanote and what that looks like in conjunction with the roadmap on the roadmap page, which is narrativefirst.com/roadmap. But regardless of what you decide to do, go check it out. It's free for right now. It's great because you can do some inception type stuff where you have boards within boards within boards. And so, you know, on the front page, you might have boards for the main character through line, the overall story through line, influence character through line, relationship story through line. You don't have to arrange them linearly. You can make one bigger than the other, you know, whichever one you think is the most important. And when you click into those boards, then you can have different story points. You can make the story points that you care about the most there. You can point to other story points, add colors. I mean, it's magical and it's really great. The only thing is it would be great if there was a built-in zoom feature. Right now, it just kind of does it automatically depending on if you reach the edges of the screen. It'll be great. And I know they have a whole feature list and obviously, they take their time, which is great. Eventually, you'll be able to use it to really get a visual feel for the structure of your story. So make sure you check that out. That's at milanote.com, M-I-L-A-N-O-T-E.com. on to The Big Sick, which is Mike Showalter's recent film with Kumail Nanjiani. He's the funny Pakistani guy from Silicon Valley. And the story of how he moved to New York and became a super famous comedian. It's really funny. I love the film. The only thing... So, if you've ever seen a Judd Apatow film about comedians, you know he loves comedians, and he loves to let them just go on and just watch and probably laugh. He probably sits on the set and just laughs at every single thing they say. And then when it comes time to editing, not really sure exactly where to edit stuff, so you get the whole thing. So, in one respect, it's really entertaining, really fun, because it's fun to watch comedians do their thing, trying to make each other laugh. But on the other hand, from an audience perspective, you're not really sure exactly when the film is going to end. I mean, you know it's obviously when the two of them are going to get together, but as far as the narrative is concerned, there isn't really a limit that's set up. And for those of you who don't know, the Dramatica theory of story looks towards a story limit to limit the scope of a narrative, and it can either be limited by time or by options. So you either have a time lock or an option lock. The time lock is the easiest one to understand, because obviously we have 12 hours to save the Earth, or there's some bad guys coming at high noon. If there's an actual set amount of time, you know, 2 hours to go 18 blocks, or whatever that Bruce Willis movie was, that's a time lock, right? It's like, well, when the time's up, story's over. Now, when you look at an option lock, that can, in some respects, be easy, like Three Wishes, 10 Little Indians, or the classic examples of Seven, or Beauty and the Beast with the rose petals falling down, but it can also be a road movie, like, you know, Rain Man going from New York to L.A., or the original Vacation, New York to L.A., anything like that, you know, you have an actual limit so that the audience knows the closer that you get to the end of that limit, you know, the pressure builds. So that's the only thing with The Big Sick, is there really isn't any kind of pressure building. It's really funny, and there's one moment that's really just wrong. And he delivers his lines, Kumail delivers his lines so well that it's really entertaining. And of course his family life is great. From a Dramatica point of view, an interesting part about the narrative is that it actually sees reaction as a problem. And I don't think there are too many films that have reaction as a problem. In fact, let me check here. Oh, correction. There are a couple. Dolce Vita, Marty, Spirited Away, and Working Girl. Ooh, interesting. I didn't realize that. Well, okay, so that's 4 out of 320, or 320 plus, and now we can add The Big Sick. And it's really cool because, obviously, as comedians, they're all driven by the reaction of the crowd. And that's where they base their whole kind of purpose. Not their purpose, their value. How well they're doing based on the reactions. From the main character point of view, from Kumail's point of view, his whole thing is the reaction of his family. What are they going to think? How are they going to react when they find out I'm dating a white girl from New York instead of the arranged marriage that's supposed to be there? And that juxtaposition, you know, you get to see from the inside of what a problem of reaction, how that feels and how one would deal with it. And then from the outside, how everyone deals with reaction and how proaction is the dynamic paired reaction, how that resolves the issues in both the overall story and main character through line. It's great. So the narrative actually works. Everything is there except for that story limit. And it's interesting, if you've ever played around with Dramatica, you know that a lot of times you'll get down to two story forms and the choice will be either option lock or time lock. And apparently it does absolutely nothing. Like if you check signposts, if you check the plot sequence, no matter what you do, option lock or time lock, it doesn't change the rest of the narrative. And I believe that's because it does something a little more interior, maybe down at the scene level, that you really can't actually see, you know, from a larger perspective, or at least a more like 50,000 foot view of story. But when it comes to scenes, which is exactly, you know, what you need to figure out in order to see if it's taking too long or if it's plodding along and people are wondering, well, when is this thing ever going to end? That's when you would need to know whether or not it's an option lock or a time lock. So in the bigger picture, it's not that important. And, you know, sometimes you can have one or the other. Ex Machina, sometimes it seems like a time lock, but it's really an option lock. But as long as you define the scope of it, then at least the audience knows when the pressure is building. And they also know when they can expect that it'll be over. And not just like, hey, we're together, it's great. Because one option isn't an option lock. You gotta have several different options. So if there's any kind of criticism for the film, The Big Sick, it would be this kind of plotting atmosphere of just watching comedians be funny until they figure everything out at the end. And applying a proper story limit to it would have solved that problem. Regardless, you should definitely check the film out because it's hilarious. It's great to hear his story and to actually find out something really cool at the very end of it all when you watch the credits. Brings us to a new feature on the podcast, the word of the week. This week's word is preconscious, part of four terms under the fixed attitude or mind domain in the Dramatica model of story. Preconscious is the filter of the mind where you find panic and anxiety. Now, the other three areas, memory, subconscious, and conscious, everybody's pretty familiar with. Memory, that's where all my memories are and what I remember. Subconscious, that's kind of your desires and your experiences and what they've led you to, kind of wherever all your motivation is coming from. And conscious is where you think about things, okay? The preconscious, it sounds kind of psychoanalytic and kind of crazy term. Preconscious, what does that mean? But Dramatica is really based on the preconscious. So if you don't buy into the idea of the preconscious level of the mind, then the entirety of Dramatica doesn't make any sense, because that's where the problem-solving style of the main character sits, is in preconscious. So our preconscious, or our operating system, the thing that filters out what we see, hear, taste, all that stuff, before we even had a chance to consider it, is filtered through this idea of either a linear mind or a holistic mind. And linear people see the world differently than holistic people see it. So the preconscious level of the mind is where all of that occurs. Now, you can also be linear or holistic in your memories, linear or holistic in your innermost desires, or linear or holistic in conscious, and then you kind of add them all up and you have a weight towards one or the other. But the preconscious is the thing that's set at birth. It's like the hardwire. It's the operating system. That's what's there. So when we have problems of the preconscious, or what they are now called impulsive responses, it's not that you have this impulse to do something. It's that your impulses are creating problems for you. And if you look at the gists, you'll see stuff like panic and anxiety, and you'll see the opposite of that, like calm and numbing, because sometimes being numb to things or being calm to things, that can cause huge issues. And these are differentiated from innermost desires. So if you have panic and anxiety, then on the other side, innermost desires, you would have stuff like anger, jealousy, fear, and rage. And rage might be somewhere in between innermost desires and impulsive responses. It's kind of like sliding in between those two. And there's a sliding scale between them. It's kind of hard to tell, well, where does preconscious start and where does it stop and subconscious begins? But there is a difference between the two, two poles within the mind that pulls the mind one direction or the other. So when you have a story with a concern of impulsive responses, it's usually when you have issues with panic or issues with anxiety. Like, the anxiety of the situation is what actually causes problems. You know, something like Zootopia or in Bruges, where the anxiety over what everybody's like given to impulsively react to is what's where all the conflict is coming from. Now, if the preconscious or impulsive responses still aren't connecting with you, the thing you should do, and this is the thing that I do on everything when it comes to Dramatica, is I look to the four items underneath the item that I'm looking at, because it's not really the label that matters. The labels mean absolutely nothing. You know, you could put anything there. It's the context of what that story point is. If you think of every quad in the Dramatica model as built on the four elements of knowledge, thought, ability, and desire, preconscious or impulsive responses is really just the ability of thought. And if you're thinking, what the heck does that even mean? If you look at every quad in Dramatica in the model, the table of story elements, every quad is based around the four elements of knowledge, thought, ability, and desire. They're just different versions of that as seen within different contexts. So preconscious or impulsive responses is actually the ability of thought, because it's the preconscious of the fixed attitude or mind, which is basically the thought domain. So the labels themselves don't matter as much as the understanding of what that item or term means and how that relates to the inequity of a story. So what I like to do is I like to look underneath impulsive responses or the preconscious and look to see, well, what issues create problems of the preconscious, and you'll find confidence, worry, value, and worth. Now, when it comes to anxiety, confidence and worry make complete sense. Value and worth, you could sort of start to understand a connection between the two. But if you think of something like anger or fear, confidence and worry sort of kind of fit into anger. Well, let's take anger. Or let's take fear. So confidence and worry, yeah, you can see a little bit of worry maybe working into fear, and value and worth working if you're not. That makes any sense. But if you think of anxiety, or the everybody's favorite gist, gagging at the thought of oysters, well, the gagging at the thought of oysters, or gagging at the thought of, I don't know, foxes living with rabbits, like, that idea is based on a confidence and worry and a value and worth sort of issue. So the best thing you can do is to look at the four items underneath the item in question if you have something that's kind of confusing, and that gives you a more holistic understanding of what the term above it actually means. And that's it for the word of the week. Hopefully you have a better understanding of the preconscious and how it works into the Dramatica model of story. If you have any questions, of course, always write to me at narrativefirst.com/contact, and I'll try to clear it up in the next podcast. Last night was the Dramatica Users Group for Dr. Zhivago, which I had never seen before, so it was kind of fun. It's basically kind of watching Ben Kenobi interview a poor Russian girl about her father. They never told you about your father, did they? Your brother, your sister. It's basically Ben Kenobi interviewing this poor Russian girl about what happened to her father and making her really regret never seeing him. And then, of course, long title cards with that same song played incessantly over and over again. And yeah. It's a very long film. It's 3.5 hours. And I understand it's a classic. It's great. The framing device of Ben Kenobi interviewing the girl is wonderful. It's not part of the actual narrative. We went in and figured out the story form, which you'll be able to... I'll leave links to the Dramatica Users Group analysis, which will contain both a podcast and the video cast of it that I shot last night. And the most interesting, or I guess most compelling part of it, is the idea that the reason why it's so long is because, unlike most films where different through lines are kind of woven together and you get different aspects of them in the same scene, in what Dramatica refers to as multi-appreciation moments, in Dr. Zhivago, you'll have entire through lines that go on for a really long time without addressing any of the other through lines. So that entire first section, which we decided went up to the Christmas party, where she took out the gun and shot that poor guy, that is kind of its own section, and then the narrative actually starts from there. But as we went through the actual story form, it almost turned out like her influence character through line, which was a concern of the future, was pretty much that entire part. And you don't really have any main character, there's no relationship to speak of yet. And it's just, you can do this, it works, because obviously you can't do all four through lines all at once, which theoretically is exactly what happens. But just the idea that you would spend so much time on one, and then it moves into the main character through line and a little bit, but then you go to the overall story for a long time, and then finally the relationship story kicks up. You know, when you string them out like that, that's why it lasts forever. It goes on for 3.5 hours and might not be very palatable for today's audiences. But you'll want to check out that analysis, because Chris goes through it. You know, I didn't lead it this time. Chris goes through and explains how those different through lines plan out. And I think we found a really strong idea of the inequities within that story and what made it such a popular film. Finally, we get to this week's article, which is all about protagonists and antagonists. And as I mentioned before, I'm continuing the discussion surrounding Captain America: Civil War, which proves to be a much more complicated film than I ever expected. I've been avoiding it for a long time. Perhaps holistically, I understood that this would be a lot of work, so I kind of put it off for a year. But it's great because it gives a lot of opportunity for me to explain Dramatica and to kind of bounce ideas off and find new ways of explaining it so that it makes sense. And this week I'm going over the protagonists and antagonists of a complete story, building upon the approach that I talked about last week, which was, you know, when it comes to identifying the goal and consequence of a narrative, you figure out, you know, where does it start? What upsets the balance of things, and figure out what that inequity is. Once you know what that inequity is, then there's a drive to resolve that inequity. And that becomes the goal of a story. So I'm not thinking good guys, I'm not thinking bad guys, I'm not thinking who's right or who's wrong. It's just strictly like there is an imbalance. What is the goal? What is the thing that would resolve that inequity? That becomes the goal. The failure to reach that would be the consequence. And then now this week I'm adding in the character functions of protagonist and antagonist. Now, one of the great things about Dramatica, which you may be familiar with or you may not, is that it separates the idea of the protagonist from the main character. A lot of really popular and well-established screenwriters combine the idea of protagonist, main character, point of view, all into the same person. And they just think, well, it's just a matter of terminology, which it is. And they'll have dual protagonists and all these other different ideas, which really don't hold up under closer scrutiny because then it becomes kind of confusing as to whose film it is and all this stuff. I remember there was a director at DreamWorks who thought Kung Fu Panda was Shifu's film because he's the one who changes. And that made me go crazy and run around the fountain a million times because I couldn't believe somebody would actually say that. Because clearly it's Poe's film. He's the main character. When it comes to the protagonist and antagonist of a story, the protagonist is the one who's actually pursuing that goal. It has nothing to do with main character. Dramatica separates the two because Dramatica sees main character as a point of view, as a perspective. Not really a character, it's a perspective on inequity. It's a very personal perspective on inequity. The protagonist and antagonist, they sit within the overall story perspective point of view. You know, the classic example is looking from above, looking above at the war, which is essentially the inequity of a story. And from that point of view, you don't really see people's individual concerns or characters' individual concerns. You see their functions. How are they functioning against each other? And one of those functions is initiative, which is the protagonist, and one is reticence, which is the antagonist. Again, there's no good or bad guys figured into any of this. Most people say, oh, protagonist, that's the good guy of a story. Or antagonist, well, that's the bad guy of a story. That's the villain. He's the one with the plan that the protagonist has to overcome. And that works great for a lot of stories and helps people out, you know, figure out their stories. But it kind of shuts out a whole bunch of different storytelling and a lot of really subtle, cool narrative techniques that you can do to kind of position the audience in different places where they end up cheering for the wrong person. The classic example, which I've written about before, is Karen Kroeder from Michael Clayton, which is the Tilda Swinton character. Now, in that film, she's a villain, I guess, but there's a lot of sympathy behind her. And that sympathy comes from the protagonist angle because the inequity that sets it all off is Tom Wilkinson's character kind of freaking out in the deposition. Like, he's screwing everything up because he's going to blow the lid on the underhanded dealings of this conglomerate. And that inequity, that brings everybody into the story. It's like, whoa, he's off his rocker. We got to do something about it. So that pursuit to resolve him being off his rocker, that situation, is coming from her character. Now, if you haven't seen the film, I don't want to spoil it for you, but she does some really socially unacceptable things that makes her kind of like this person you're kind of rooting for. You don't know why you're rooting for her. You're actually rooting for her because she's pursuing, because our drive, our initiative, our instinct is to solve problems, at least for most of us, is to solve problems. So that the person that is pursuing, that's the one that we instinctively go with, whether good or bad. And that's what gives the film this, like, complex. It also probably makes it harder for some people to digest because it's not very simple and very easy, something that they can just watch in the corner. They actually have to pay attention to it. But it makes for a more mature narrative. And again, she's not a good guy. She is a bad guy. And Michael Clayton's not the greatest guy in the world either. And that's great because you have a juxtaposition. He actually works as the antagonist of that film. So he's a little bit of a bad guy, but he's also a good guy. I mean, it's, you know, George Clooney. Of course, you got to root for George Clooney. But he's the antagonist. He actually brings her down and makes it so that there is no resolution there. Now, something like How to Train Your Dragon, which is another example that I've used a ton of times, is, and I was surprised by this myself because I actually worked on the film as an animator, but I thought it was brilliant because both protagonists and antagonists are actually on the same side. So Stoic, who is the king, not king, what am I talking about? Who is the Viking leader, and his son Hiccup, you know, the dragons come and destroy their hometown, and it's like, all right, we got to do something. We got to train the next generation of dragon killers, right? It's like How to Train Your Dragon, how to train your inner dragon and defeat these bad guys. And so the whole story is about training that next generation. Now, the person leading that charge is Stoic, you know, Gerard Butler. He's the one pursuing that end to resolve. It's like, well, if I train this next generation, then everything will be fine. I won't have to worry about it anymore. Especially training his son, because he's got to like teach this kid what's up. The person who's preventing it throughout the entire narrative is Hiccup. He's the actual antagonist. He's like, I don't think that's a good idea. Oh, wow. That's horrible. You just pointed to all of me. That's the scene I animated, and that's horrible. It's probably the worst impression, and I listened to that line for days on end. You just pointed to all of me. Anyways, he's the antagonist of the piece because he's preventing and getting people to kind of reconsider. Like, these are nice guys. These are great animals. You should be friends with them. So without looking at good or bad, you're just looking at inequity resolution. Who's the one pursuing the inequity resolution and who's the one trying to prevent it? The one pursuing is the protagonist. The one preventing is the antagonist. And a new example, because I'm always trying to put new things in here, I finally put in one about Manchester by the Sea, where Joe Chandler, which I just found out is really cool because it's played by Kyle Chandler, and his character's name is Joe Chandler. That's the same name. When he finds out he's going to die, only has 10 years left to live, he begins to, you know, figure out a way for his brother Lee, which is Casey Affleck, to figure into his son's life. Which is a developing a plan or conceptualizing concern or goal. That will resolve the inequity of, hey, I'm not going to be here. I got to figure out some way that my son will be taken care of. And Lee becomes the antagonist of that because he's avoiding it and trying to reconsider. He's constantly reconsidering, like, well, maybe I can do this, maybe I can't do this, until finally, you know, he gives his final answer. But both of them are on the same side. They want to do good things. Obviously, Joe's a good guy. There's nothing he could have done about it. He's the protagonist. Even from the grave, his machinations are still working its way through the narrative. But Lee is the antagonist, and he's the one pushing against it. And, you know, obviously, he's an anti-hero, I guess is probably what people would call him, whatever. But he's the one preventing that resolution, and eventually, well, you'll have to watch it to see. And there you have three films where the clear-cut idea of the protagonist being a good guy and the antagonist being a bad guy aren't so clear. I mean, it has nothing to do with it. It doesn't figure into it. And getting to that point where you just think objectively about inequity resolution is a key towards solidifying the integrity of your own narratives. And then I applied that to Captain America Civil War, where the idea is when the Scarlet Witch, Wanda, when she grabs, by the way, that's Elizabeth Olsen, never realized that, when she grabs the explosion and she throws it up into the air to save pretty boy Steve Rogers, she ends up killing a bunch of people, and that's like, all right, that's it, you guys killed a bunch of people at Sokovia, now you're killing humanitarian workers in Wakanda, is that what it's called? So that's it, we gotta come up with some rules so that you guys are put on lockdown. And that, her throwing that explosion and killing those people, that creates the inequity of the film. And to resolve that inequity, you know, to make that no longer a problem is the goal of the story. And from many people's point of view, that requires stopping the Avengers. Now, some people are good guys that want to stop them, and some are bad guys. And the efforts to prevent or reconsider this idea of stopping the Avengers, that would be the antagonist. Now, so that would make the protagonist of the film, in an objective viewpoint, Zemo, the bad guy, because he's the one pushing towards this idea of stopping the Avengers. I mean, he has a very specific way of doing it, and it's great because the protagonist in Dramatica is composed of two character elements, pursuit and consider. One's an external and one's an internal element. The pursuit element is that drive forward, the drive towards resolving a goal. Like, I have a goal, I need to drive forward towards it and pursue it. Obviously, he's working towards that through everything. He's got the book. He's, you know, going and screwing with people's heads. Like, all this stuff, all these activities that he's doing that's creating problems, he's after a goal. And in the end game, he wants certain characters to consider other characters bad guys so that they'll just destroy each other and he'll get his revenge. That's why I said it was a typical revenge story. Now, the one person trying to prevent it or actually avoid stepping away from or escaping a problem instead of actually pursuing it, that's the character element of avoid. And the internal element would be reconsider, or, you know, constantly rethinking things, or, hey, you know, maybe there's a different way to think about this. That is 100% Captain America Steve Rogers. That whole scene in the stairwell where he's trying to save Bucky, fight Bucky, save the police officers, fight the police, like, that whole awesome scene is 100% the motivations of an antagonist trying to prevent or escape or avoid further conflict and for their death, because the consequence of them not resolving that inequity is that there will be more people will die. And the consequence, if you have a goal of obtaining the story consequence in order to balance out the narrative, would be becoming, or changing one's nature is the more familiar term. But for me, becoming makes more sense because people are dying. People are becoming dead. And more people will become dead unless we actually resolve this problem of the Avengers just doing whatever the heck they want to do. And that is actually what happens at the end of the film. So when it comes to actually identifying the forces of motivation within a story, the best possible way to get a clear understanding of what's going on in your story is to think of the protagonist and antagonist in terms of inequity resolution. Now, with Captain America: Civil War, just like you were kind of rooting for Karen in Michael Clayton, for some reason you're kind of rooting for Zemo as well, because instinctively you want this problem to be resolved, and it's like, yeah, I want to see the Avengers stop working together. I mean, obviously in the big picture that's not a really great thing, but in context of this narrative, it's like, yeah, I want to see the two of them fight. I want to see that last sequence. And I believe that's actually part of the structure, and that's what, you know, instinctively everybody wants that problem to be resolved. So for some reason they want to see Captain America and Iron Man fight, and it's encoded into the structure of the actual story. That's it for this week's podcast. Next week, I'll be diving into the domains and through lines of Captain America: Civil War. If you'd like a roadmap of your own story, whether it be a film, novel, or play, in Milanote under the context of the Dramatica theory of story, be sure to contact me at narrativefirst.com/roadmap. Have a great week of writing, and I will see you next time.